crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're coming to you from Jerusalem, Israel, as per usual. On this program, we look at the latest developments in biblical archaeology here in Israel. And we also look at the latest news and events from the region and how they fit into biblical prophecy. We're going to talk a little bit about both today, mainly focusing on what's happening towards Israel's north and east. No doubt you've heard a lot about what's happened over the past few days with Israel and Iran targeting each other for the very first time in the Syrian civil war. This is a huge development, and we'll go into details of why that is important a little bit later. First, though, I'd like to cover some feedback from last week's program. There was a number of comments that were sent in to the website, but then also on Facebook as well, commenting on this. The program was entitled The EU, who said archaeology is being used as a tool to legitimize settlements in East Jerusalem. It's got about 500 listens right now on SoundCloud, and a number of people on Facebook were kind of not necessarily amused by this, but they were startled by the EU for coming out with this document that was being sent back to Europe, from written by different European heads or European diplomats here in the city of Jerusalem. And it was talking about how Israel, according to them, is using archaeological excavations in the city of David to promote a narrative that is different from the historical narrative. The historical narrative being that the Jews were there. And anyway, you can go back and listen to that if you so desire. But some comments from Facebook. This one first came from Jerry B. Bond. He wrote this: I recently returned from 5 weeks working on the Ir David excavations, or the City of David excavations, and as a professional archaeologist with more than 20 years working in the profession, and all the work, he said, all the work I took part in or witnessed was to the highest standards and meticulously excavated and recorded all remains from all periods while I was there. So that's what the EU was stating, that Israel was just focusing on the bits of history, the tiny bits of history where the Jews, the Israelites were involved anciently, and they're disregarding the other bits of history. Well, that, if you've been here and if you've visited the sites, and as this man said, after working there for 5 weeks, this could not be further from the truth. This is from another, now on Facebook, Nir Orbach. He writes this: the allegations of this EU report about the excavations in the city of David, ancient Jerusalem, has no truth in it. I saw in my own eyes the amount of effort to uncover a street from the Byzantine period, and this effort is made even though it is clear that these remains is of an era when no Jew lived there. Shame on the EU. So again, another eyewitness account to show how Israeli archaeologists are revealing all the history that's there, not just the history of the Jews. Miriam writes this: interestingly enough, we didn't hear any of these words from the EU when the Palestinian Waqf threw out loads of Jewish historical artifacts. Of course, she's referring to back in the 90s when the Arabs wanted to build a mosque or enlarge Al-Aqsa, kind of with another mosque next to it, towards the southeastern corner of the Temple Mount, when they brought in their front-end loaders and their big trucks. Instead of conducting any type of archaeology, they removed truckloads and truckloads and truckloads of soil, of historic remains, of archaeological features even. And they removed them by the truckload and dumped them in the Kidron Valley, and that's being excavated right now to this day by the Ir David. And this is another person here, Phil Cohen. He writes this. He says, of course, all the historians, archaeologists, and professors are all wrong, and the moronic European Union diplomats are right. And that was a bit of a joking one, I think. David D. Brassier said this: at least they see the historical facts correctly as confirming historical Jewish presence. The funny thing is that at the same time, the Waqf is actively destroying Jewish artifacts on the Temple Mount. And he goes on to talk about that similar thing that Miriam did earlier. And nevertheless, there was about 40 comments on Facebook about that program. And if you are here in Israel and you want to get a glimpse at the type of bias that the European Union has, specifically targeting the history of the Jews and specifically targeting archaeology, then you can go and listen to that program from last week. Today, though, we are going to take a little break from archaeology and talk about what's happening in Israel's northwest. I'll quote at length here from just a review of the Hebrew media. This is what Times of Israel puts together, I believe, on every Sunday. They look back through the Hebrew and they summarize some of it, and they produce an article about it. And I would just like to quote a couple of paragraphs from it right now. This was from the article entitled, "After Day of Fighting, the Fog of Almost War Creeps In." Israel took a giant step towards war Saturday, and Papers Sunday focused not only on the intense airstrikes and downing of an F-16, which we'll get to in a second, but the fact that what Israel was fighting openly for the first time was its biggest bugbear of all, Iran. Headlines in the papers called the day's cross-border exchange a, quote, battle with Iran, trying to get a handle on both the tangle of enemies and not quite enemies in the southern Syria and whether Israel has crossed the Rubicon in terms of heading towards war, with dailies going easy on the hard news and heavy on the analysis. And then it quotes Amos Harel writing in Haaretz saying this, quote, "Israel and Iran are now, for the first time, engaged in a full frontal confrontation on Syrian territory. That's the main significance of Saturday's day of fighting in the north." That's what people focused on here in Israel in analyzing the back and forth that took place Saturday basically on Saturday. It was that this is bringing Iran and Israel head to head for the very first time. Yes, Israel has fought against Iranian proxies in Hezbollah, Hamas, and even some of the proxies that are on the border in the Golan Heights before. But now you had an Iranian-directed, Iranian-made drone cross into Israeli territory and be shot down by an Apache helicopter, and thereafter airstrikes from Israel took off, or airplanes from Israel jets took off and struck a number of different targets inside Syria, as we'll get to, and they responded by firing their anti-aircraft weaponry back towards the Israeli jets and actually took down an Israeli jet. For the first time since 1982, an Israeli jet was blown out of the sky. Now, we don't know whether it was a direct hit or whether it was exploded directly next to it, and then it ended up taking down the jet. The two pilots, or the pilot and the navigator inside that jet, had to eject for safety, and one of them is still in a pretty serious condition, although I believe he has been taken off the respirator and is now breathing by himself. But I'll just recap this for you a little bit on today's program so you can see where we are. But have in the back of your mind the fact that this isn't Israel and Hamas going at it. This isn't Israel and Hezbollah going at it. This is Israel fighting against Iran for the first time here in decades. This is what it says in the Times of Israel, a different report from this morning, 6:28. Judah Ari Gross wrote this. He says, At approximately 4:25 a.m. on Saturday, an Iranian drone from Syria entered Israeli territory from Jordan and was shot down by an Apache attack helicopter near the northern Israeli of Beit Shan, according to the army. Israel said the drone infiltration was a, quote, severe and irregular violation of Israeli sovereignty and warned of further actions against unprecedented Iranian aggression. And in response to that, you had the Israeli Air Force quickly conduct a series of reprisal attacks in Syria, targeting 12 different Iranian and Syrian bases, Iranian or Syrian anti-aircraft batteries. And some of these were stationed from men, so there's definitely Iranians and Syrians that were killed in these reprisal attacks as well. But I'll just stick with the drone for a second here, the drone that flew over into Israeli territory, Iranian-made, but not Iranian designed. It's an interesting story behind this drone. This comes from the Aviationist. They wrote an article about this earlier today. They said this: based on the footage, the UAV, or the drone, shot down by the Apache helicopter seems to be a Thunderbolt, one of those unveiled by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in 2016, and seemingly based on the captured US RQ-170 stealth drone. So we've got the Iranians using a drone flying into Israeli territory. We don't know if it had a payload on it or not at this point. But look at this. This is a drone that seems to be one that was unveiled in 2016, which was based off an United States drone. How was that United States drone captured? Well, if you go back to 2011, under President Obama, you'll remember that famous quote where he said during his daily press brief, well, during one of his briefings, it was a White House press conference, and this was back on, I think it was early December 2011. He addressed the fact that a top secret surveillance drone over the border here with Afghanistan and Iran had been shot down on December 5th. And then he said this: we have asked for it back. We'll see how the Iranians respond. So instead of going in there, destroying the drone, making sure they couldn't gather any intelligence of it or how to create such a thing, Mr. Obama asked for it back. That was America's response. And here we are, 7 years later, and that drone has been successfully copied by the Iranians, and it was used to come into, fly into Israeli territory to do we don't know what. And it was shot out of the sky. And yet this is where it originated, this drone, back when America did nothing to get their drone back or to destroy it or do something to ensure that Iran couldn't gather the technology on it or learn how to create such a thing. Back at the time, this is what the Iranians wrote, and this was in Iran's semi-official Fars News Agency. Their headline back then was this, quote, Obama begs Iran to give him back his toy plane. To give him back his toy plane. That's how they saw it. Begging from the United States. Then the defense minister said this at the time, quote, the American espionage drone is now Iran's property and our country will decide what steps to take regarding it. And indeed, they've done that. They've copied it and they've put it to work against the United States ally, Israel. And I don't know if you could call it much of an ally under President Obama, under his reign, under his rule. This drone was captured, copied, and now it's been mobilized and sent into battle against Israel. This is what Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said. He was the prime minister, the president at the time of Iran. He said, the Americans have perhaps decided to give us this spy plane. Then he said, Iran is making progress learning to control the plane and analyze its systems. Back in 2011, we're learning how this thing works. And we're going to put it to use. And they have done that now. Put it to use against Israel. Very interesting that this is the very same type of drone that was taken out there or copied back in 2011. Nevertheless, after this, we had Israeli warplanes. I think there was about eight different jets that took off. I think the F-15s and F-16s that were used in taking out different anti-aircraft batteries, different locations, different sites. The IDF said that it bombed four Iranian targets that are part of Iran's military establishment in Syria. This included a mobile command center on an air base which was outside Palmyra, which you look at a map and that's a decent way inside Syrian territory. This is the same base where an Iranian operator flew that drone into Israeli territory, and they basically destroyed that mobile command center. Now, it's what's interesting is just how the Arab world, particularly the Syrians and then the Iranians, the Persians, are celebrating the downing of an Israeli jet. This is another article from Times of Israel today. It says this: since Saturday morning, Syrian and Iranian authorities have busied themselves with reveling in the reported downing of an Israeli F-16 fighter jet by Syrian air defenses. In Damascus, residents handed out candies to passers-by. Social media used share cartoons depicting an Israeli plane being struck by Syrian missiles. While in Damascus, Tehran, and even Gaza, there were declarations of a, quote, strategic change in the region and a new equation. So now Israelis can look at this and see what happened in the reprisal attacks and how many stations inside Syria that belong to the Iranians or the Syrians that were destroyed by the Israelis. And they can focus on how much Iran was beaten back by this. But that's not what the Iranians and the Syrians are focused on. That's not what Hezbollah is focused on. They're focused on that for the first time since 1982, we have an Israeli jet that has been shot out of the sky. That's important. That's important for them. The important thing isn't that they were attacked from Israel. The important thing isn't that their drone was shot out of the sky. It was that they got one. They got an Israeli jet. Shot that right out of the sky. And now they are emboldened by it. That article that I was just talking about, it was entitled "Riding High After IS Defeat," or "Islamic State Defeat, Iranian Access Tries Its Luck with Israel." That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. They're going to see how far they can push Israel. And guess what? They'll take some losses, but they'll be happy with the fact that they could take an Israeli jet out of the sky. Jonathan Schanzer, he writes for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. I think he's not their president, but he's close to the top there. And he wrote a thread on Twitter, and this was from yesterday. And he's generally got very good analysis about what's going on here in the Middle East, specifically concerning Israel. He understands what is something out of the ordinary and what is something that isn't. Because sometimes if you're listening to the news or you're watching the news, it's difficult to know when something is important, when something is a game changer or not. And I just want to read through what he wrote on Twitter last night. He said this: "Last night's clash in the Golan was significant on a number of levels. First, this appears to be the first incursion by Iran via drone of Israel's airspace, a major escalation." Indeed it is. This isn't a proxy anymore. This is Iran that, if you take a look at a map, they're from a couple of countries over, but now they have been able to conquer vast swaths of Iraq and support their ally Assad in Syria with ground troops. And they've, of course, mobilized Hezbollah, their Afghani brigade, Pakistanis, of course. But Iran is here on the ground in Syria, right next to Israel, as we've spoken about for the past year. And now Iran is acting in direct confrontation with Israel. They have broken Israel's sovereignty, come across into their airspace for the very first time with this attack on Saturday. Then he says this: "The downing of an Israeli fighter jet by Syrian anti-aircraft weaponry also marks a milestone. The Syrians, with Iranians' help, now appear to be better prepared compared to past skirmishes. The incident must be seen as part of a string of events where the Iran axis has tested Israel's red lines by either violating Israeli airspace, creating new assets in Syria, like some of their militias, or sending game-changing weapons to Hezbollah. Tensions are reaching a boiling point." They are. Then he says this: "Israel hammered the Iranian drone base in response to last night, but we may be nearing the moment where Israel determines that it must clear out the many targets it has identified in Syria and Lebanon, possible larger operation forthcoming." Now that that the Iranians are right on the edge of the Golan Heights and that they're sending drones over into Israeli territory, are Israel's generals and its leading politicians deciding whether preemptive strike is necessary? Of course, it's not really a preemptive strike because there has been actions of war. But is it going to be a large-scale attack? Will Israel decide that we've had enough? We've had enough and push back the Iranians and the Syrians from more of the Golan Heights? Will they begin to fight against Hezbollah in Lebanon in a more of a large-scale attack? Now, this final comment from Jonathan Shanza here is interesting regarding that. He says this, and should this conflict erupt, it will be a nasty one. Hezbollah rockets are estimated at 150,000. Thousands of Shiite militias stand ready to fight with Iran, and opening a new front in Syria is loaded with possible unintended consequences. I don't think we realize how close Israel is to going to war right now in the northeast of the country, in Syria. And if Syria gets involved, obviously Hezbollah might be mobilized in southern Lebanon, and those rockets will be coming raining down in the northern part of Israel, Haifa, south of Haifa, all the way to Tel Aviv. That's the weaponry that they have now, worse than the Second Lebanon War. Israel has done its best to stop that weaponry getting into the hands of Hezbollah across Syria, but some of it has got there, and some of them, and they are developing their own weaponry inside southern Lebanon, these highly developed missiles to target Israel. Is Israel getting to a point that they will attack Iran and Syria in Syria? This is what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said just last night regarding this.
I've been warning for some time about the dangers of Iran's military entrenchment in Syria. Iran seeks to use Syrian territory to attack Israel for its professed goal of destroying Israel. This morning, Iran brazenly violated Israel's sovereignty. They dispatched an Iranian drone from Syrian territory into Israel, and this demonstrates that our warnings were 100% correct. Israel holds Iran and its Syrian host responsible for today's aggression. We will continue to do whatever is necessary to protect our sovereignty and our security.
So Israel's going to do what they think is necessary to protect their sovereignty and security. Now, what will that entail? This is a time for counting the cost for Israel, for sure. Once they recognize how many troops Iran has in Syria right now, they could be easily turned to facing off against Israel in the Golan Heights, as well as mobilizing Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And it would make the decision extremely difficult for Israel to go to war. But what we've learned from Iran for the longest period of time is that they do have this goal of destroying Israel, and that they've talked about this goal of destroying Israel, and that their leaders numerous times have talked about the cancer which they see as Israel. And that cancer needs to be removed, according to them. And so while many, many in the left and many, many in Europe, many, many in the United States and many in Israel might not have actually believed that Iran does actually want to destroy Israel, you really need to track Iran's movements over the past decade. What have they been trying to do? Why are they so involved in Iraq? Why are they so involved in Syria? Why are they so involved in Lebanon? You could just view this as a desire for Iranian expansionism, or you could view it for what it is, and that is to create a strong launching pad to destroy Israel. Iran's final objective in the Middle East is not to control Syria. It's not to control Iraq. It's not even to control the Red Sea area. It is to destroy Israel, to capture Jerusalem. That's why their Quds Force is named that. Quds Force. That's our end goal. They've stated it from the beginning. Why don't we believe them? With events like this past weekend, we should start to believe them. This is what Iran wants. Our editor-in-chief wrote early in the 90s, this, he said that the most precious jewel of Iran's plan is to conquer Jerusalem. That's what Iran wants to do. They want to conquer Jerusalem. They want to remove the Israelis. They want to get the Jews out of there. They want to conquer Jerusalem and then use it as a way of galvanizing the Islamic world behind them for more of their domination. Of course, even Israel isn't the final objective. Their final objective, they're going to have so many more goals than that. But Israel is definitely a target on the way. And it's certainly their biggest target in the Middle East. And that's why Iran has dedicated so many resources to ensuring that Bashar al-Assad stays in power. It needs to find a way to fully fund and fully equip Hezbollah in Lebanon. Why not? Why not continue to support Syria's president as a means of getting the weaponry there? And also establishing another front against Israel in the Golan Heights. That's what we're seeing right now, 6-7 years into the Syrian civil war. No, it's not winding down. Yes, there are so many other international actors right there. Right now, this past week or week and a half in Syria, we have seen an uptick in violence that we haven't seen for about a year. We had massive attack by the Assad regime that the Russians couldn't stop against pro-American or U.S.-backed fighters. The United States came to their aid, killing 100 of Assad's men in direct armed combat. The United States is in Syria fighting. We have the Russians there. The Iranians are there. The Kurds are obviously there. The Turks are there. And now is Israel about to enter the fray as well? Now, we don't know. We don't know for sure whether Israel is going to lead an offensive into Syria. But one thing is for sure, Israel is thinking about it right now. They must be. They must be thinking about it and laying the plans and looking to see what will happen if Israel goes to war. What will Russia do? What will the Iranians do? What will the Americans do? Will America have their back in an offensive war in Syria to stop Iran's march across the Middle East? What will Europe do? Europe, who has been so quick to jump into Iran, to invest in Iran's post-nuclear deal world and in their economy, are they finally going to wake up to what Iran is doing across Syria? Now, Syria is just a very important place to watch right now because of all of these dynamics. In no place in the world do you have so many foreign interests involved and clashing up against one another. Now, obviously Israel has the most to lose right now, as it is Iran's number one target. But who's number two and who's number three? Surely there would be some outside powers that are stepping up and taking notice. One thing that we should have learned about Iran by now is that it doesn't back down unless it's met with superior force. And Bible prophecy indicates that Iran does have something coming to it. Superior force is going to be brought against the Iranian regime, but it's not even going to be perpetrated by Israel. It's going to be somebody else that finally says enough is enough. And it's not going to be Russia. It's not going to be the United States. It's going to be someone else. If you would like to read more about who will finally put an end to Iranian ambition, both in Israel, over Jerusalem, and also in the world in general, please request our booklet, King of the South. King of the South. We'll send it to you for free wherever you are in the world, or you can even download it and read it right away. And as you go through that, you'll see how we've documented Iran's rise and even prophesied Iran's rise 20 plus years ago. And you'll read about who that superior force will be to finally put the Iranian regime back down. It can be so easy to view these events in northern Israel right now and in Syria as being completely hopeless. But if you read through this booklet, King of the South, you'll see that there is a hope-filled end for these events as well, for the people, not just in Israel, but the people of Syria, and even eventually the Iranians as well. That's about all we have time for today. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that by emailing the program, by writing letters at watchjerusalem.co.il. I'll get those emails and strive to respond to them as best I can. Thanks again for listening. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.